radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 8th of November 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com tonight. And we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, hello to you, sir. How are you doing?
Good evening. Doing okay this week. Everything ticking over nicely.
Excellent, excellent. We've had lots of changes here, of course. Listeners are probably well aware that we've now changed to Radio Albion. RadioAlbion.com is the new website, and it all went really, really smoothly thanks to William Fink, who is an absolute computer genius. Yes. We have Bill to thank for that running so smoothly. And that's not it with the improvements. We've got more improvements coming next week. We've got a big surprise, a really nice surprise to let listeners know about next week as well. That will all be happening. Hopefully, I'll be able to start talking about that on the Monday. But we've also got new music, as you just heard. We've got new album art as well. Hopefully we're going to have some new shows. What do you think about the name change, Dennis? You happy with that, Radio Albion? Do you have any preferences at all?
Well, I mean, I didn't feel there's anything wrong with Radio Albion. Had been established, but I can understand the change. I know the wider appeal that you're seeking, and the more listeners the better, so I totally understand.
Yeah, it's. I think some people get put off. It's the sort of people that would actually really enjoy our content look at the title and they think, it's an American street gang, or they're just going to be neo Nazis, you know. And we've got a wide variety of content. You know, we got Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson who translates all these Russian texts and comes out with all this revisionist history from the Russian point of view, and you would never know that from the title of the site. And he also has problems telling people it, you know? So it's I think it's going to be a good move. We were Radio Stormer for a year and Radio Aryan for 4 years. And now we're going to be Radio Albion, hopefully for at least another 4 years, I would have thought. This is stage three. Yeah, and it was this month that we changed to Radio Aryan as well. So it's actually on the on the anniversary.
Remember that well as well.
Yeah, well, you've been here right since the beginning, haven't you, Dennis?
Right from the beginning.
Right since Radio Stormer and before Truthful Out Radio. We had Behind the Reich, didn't we? Before we properly learned how to use our microphones and get the sound right.
Finally got a microphone that people can understand,
yeah. I've been listening to Axis War Heroes this week. I hope listeners are pleased with that. I edited together some of the episodes that Schmidt did on Axis War Heroes and made them into standalone episodes. And I've been enjoying listening to that. And the sound quality's improved a lot since then. But it's just great hearing about re-listening to these German heroes and imagining what the time was like back then, the sort of time when you could hand the pistols back to the officers that you just captured because that was the honourable thing to do. And the officers...
Unless you were... Soviet.
Yeah, well, unless you were Soviet. I mean, these were Italian officers that were handed their weapons back. And you can't imagine doing anything like that today.
Hardly. Rules have changed.
Yeah, well chivalry is just gone now, isn't it? And you think the thousands of years of tradition that was, that when you captured an officer, you could leave him with his weapon and he could be trusted on his word not to use it to attack you. Amazing. Thinking back, anyway, yeah, it's been good to listen to that. So, how's your week been? Have you been you've been working on the final episode, Dennis?
Yeah, well, to be honest, if I'd put a bit of an effort, more of an effort in this week, I probably could have finished it. But I've been tied up in one or two other things, so I didn't want to really rush it. But the one of the problems is the censorship by YouTube. And it was one particular documentary which was for the first part of Secret Masonic Victory, was really, you know, the basis of this lecture by Ian Sadler from New Zealand. He did a great lecture, and I took a lot of information from that, and that's vanished now from YouTube. So the title is obviously going to be in the credits, but the YouTube video is somewhat lost at the moment.
So you are hoping to use that? You've already used that, have you, in one of the early episodes?
Yeah, and a lot of his research I was working on, and so some of the sources went with the video, if you know what I mean.
Well,
can Google it, you know.
Well, this is a great shame, isn't it? You know, you've got people that are using Twitter and Facebook, and they've got private messages on there, and they've got a record of the private messages that they've had and the things they've learned and the links that they've got there, maybe even business they've been doing by private message, and they lose their account, and it's all gone.
It's gone, isn't it?
Yeah. All that information.
Yes. And to be honest, you can go around, I think I've said this before, where you can go around the internet, and it's like a scrapyard. You go on these websites, and it's got to, you know, watch this video, and there's nothing on it. And that's all over the internet. It's pretty horrific.
Yeah, broken links. Yeah, you're right there. It does make everything look a complete mess. I have noticed some of our people are getting their own back on the newspapers. I've seen a couple of news stories that have been attacking nationalists, and they've used pictures and things from Instagram, and the clever nationalists have changed the pictures for other pictures and put different captions there, which I thought was pretty neat. So maybe that's a way to get around it. Maybe you'll find that on maybe you'll find it again on BitChute.
But it was a type of deep research, really, which he'd done, which even I was amazed at. So it were a shame. But obviously, for the first half of my documentary, a lot of it was based on his research. And there you go.
Well, what was his name again? Maybe one of the listeners will have a copy of it.
It's a weird first name. It's Ian Sadler, it's called. I think he's a pastor now as well. I don't think he was at that time. But I went on looking for him, and I found some up-to-date videos, but nothing on his older stuff.
Yeah, I would really recommend people download what they're watching so they've got a copy of it, a hard copy of it. So if it does get removed from YouTube, they can upload it again to BitChute. I mean, we should promote BitChute more, because they do have a free speech policy there within limits. Mm-hmm. And we want more people to use them and support them. And that's where everybody seems to be going. So maybe you'll find it there. Maybe one of the listeners now will know what you're talking about, and they'll be able to upload it. I mean, that's the beauty of having this podcast, isn't it? You can reach out to people.
And, hopefully.
People get back with, hopefully, with the information that you're looking for. So maybe next week, then, we'll get a new episode out of you. That would be good.
I think... as a betting man, I'd say probably, but you know what I'm like.
Excellent. Excellent stuff. Well, that means this week we're going to have to get back to Goebbels and his pamphlet, Those Damn Nazis, written in 1929, which is a very, very good pamphlet. I've been enjoying this discussion that we've had about the subjects that he raises in it. In the first one we did, we covered why we are nationalists. In last week's episode, we covered why we are socialists, and this week we are going to look at why a workers' party. And just before we get into that, I'll just say, I mean, you know, you might think the name, the National Socialist German Workers' Party, is a bit clunky, but every one of those words had a deep meaning to it and was central to the party itself. As we've learned, I mean, it was central to them that they were German. Absolutely central that they were nationalists, and they explained all of that. Also that they're socialists, and this workers' party bit at the end as well. That was just as important as the National Socialist bit and the German bit. So it really was an inspired name, because what you get in the name is what you get in the party.
On the tip.
Basically.
Yeah.
That's
right.
You know, it's a shame they sort of shortened it to Nazi, thinking it sounds like nasty, but even the word Nazi's got a got a bit of a ring to it. I think they did use it at one point, didn't they? They struck a medal, I think.
A coin, when they did the transfer.
Yeah, the Haverar transfer agreement thing. They used the term. And it's been used in America, hasn't it? With the American Nazi Party with Rockwell. He called it that. It seems a bit ironic now for somebody to call themselves a Nazi.
That's true.
Just a bit of an insult that the left use. The Workers' Party, I mean, what do we have today? The Socialist Workers' Party, communists in Britain. And that's that's about as close as the nationalists get.
Fabian Society.
Yeah. We don't really, you know, since that time, nationalism, although people do still talk about the socialism aspect of it, and obviously the working aspect of it, the word Workers' Party seems to have been hijacked by the communists and the socialists.
Yeah, it seems that they're the ones with the pictures of, you know, the workers with the hammers and building some up, where really, you know, if they were certainly Jews at that time, the work wasn't really what they were intending to do.
No, they were never on the side of the workers. They just destroyed industry. But if you look at it today with Brexit and the Brexiteers and the people that want to leave, it's mainly working class people. And then speaking as their advocates, you've got people that are involved in industry that are quite high up. And that's a similar thing to what we're talking about here with the National Socialist German Workers' Party. You had the industrialists that were at the top and investing in things and speaking up. And then you had the workers that were supporting them, because they both knew that they had to rely on one another. They didn't want to be at war with one another, this class war idea of communism. And it just seems similar today, because often you'll get the left sort of questioning it. Don't these Brexiteers know that Jacob Rees-Mogg's got a lot of money and he's a big capitalist? And you think, yeah, but he genuinely cares about the people, and he speaks in a language that the people can understand, actually. You know, I've known people that have met him and said that, you know, he spoke to them in a language they could understand. He wasn't being all toffee-nosed. So, you know, you get good people at the top of society, and you get good people at the bottom of society. And you want them all working together for the good of the nation. So let's have a look at this. Why a workers' party? Work is not mankind's curse, but his blessing. A man becomes a man through labour. It elevates him, makes him great and aware, raises him above all other creatures. It is in the deepest sense creative, productive, and culture-producing. Without labour, no food. Without food, no life. And that sort of simplifies things there. But the way we're taught today, you know, all the comedy and the television, it's all about trying to avoid work. I mean, I can remember being a kid and seeing this sort of on the television and trying to get out of work. And I can remember my dad saying, you know, you should never try and get out of it. It's something you have to do. You try and do it to the best you can, so that you take pride in it and you can be proud of your accomplishment.
I think the problem is in this country is finding something that you want to do. I mean, you can find work. I know it's not the easiest time these days, but you can find work. And the problem is there's a lot of people finding work and they're spending hours of their lives in a job they hate. So if you can get a job which you actually love, then it no longer becomes work.
Well, I think one of the ways to improve that and work on that will come clear as we go through this. But this idea that it's a curse to work, I think the Jews bear some responsibility for that. I mean, what they do with their money lending, they make out that having lots of money, that's the end goal of everything, is to make as much money as possible. And if you can, you don't have to work.
Well, the other thing is that they like people to work for them, so they don't have to work as such.
But the whole idea of the lottery is win all this money and you'll never have to work again, as if it's a dreadful thing to work. But I mean, if you're working outside, I mean, you're going to be healthy and fit. you don't need to go to the gym. You know, people people work on building sites and fishing boats and that do labouring. I mean, they're just, you know, bemused when they hear about people going to the gym to get exercise, because they just get it every day. And, you know, and they look super fit and they're healthy and they're getting paid for it. And then at the other end, you've got the guy that is going to the gym and he's doing his intellectual work or whatever, and he's got this pride at the end of it that he's made a lot of money for his company today, or he's designed something. You know, it's I understand what you're saying about getting this fulfillment that people don't have anymore. But if you were to know that every bit of work that you did was for the benefit of your nation and you were going to benefit from that, I think that it would change that somewhat. You know, when you
That's when a country like Germany expresses this unity, where this is very rarely expressed in other societies. So I do agree that if it became, you know, the norm for everyone to pull together, then fine, this would work again as it did in Germany. But this all starts from the top.
When you think about it, everybody has to pay tax, but what does that tax go on? It all goes on the interest. It all goes on the usury. It goes on the interest that is put on the budget, on the money that is borrowed from the banks. So it's not actually going into improving the country. If it wasn't for that, then, and say everybody was paying 10% income tax, you would see all these improvements around you and you would think, well, I contributed towards that. I paid towards that and I'm happy to pay towards that. And you would be happy to see that, you know, there weren't any homeless white people and everybody was well looked after and healthy. And instead of the way it is today, and this money's taken from people and we're told, well, you want to take more money from the rich. We want more taxes on the rich, you know, as Jeremy Corbyn is saying. But if you didn't have these rich that were running these industries, you wouldn't have all these jobs, and they're actually the ones that are making the most money. It's just that the money is being diverted to another place when it should be going to the nation. But you know what they're saying here: if you don't have labor,
that is the problem.
Yeah, if you don't have labor, you have no food. Yeah, yeah. No, you don't. If you don't have any labor, you don't have any food. So this idea of you don't want to work and you want to get other people to work for you, but you don't want to work for yourself, you know, that's, you know, it's not going to get you anywhere. But again, it's the individualist way of looking at it, isn't it? Where you don't care about anybody else and it's all out for yourself. And again, that goes back to, you know, the Jewish way of doing things, because they could just move to another country and do the same again.
Another thing that helped Germany was the one party. Because when Hitler was in, he was in permanently. And so when they had this idea of unifying everybody and everybody pulling together, that was going to last. Whereas when you get another election in 4 years and then you get other different policies and different points of view, it kind of, you never can sustain anything good.
You know, you'd be hard pushed to think up of a worse system than democracy, could you, when you think about
awful.
It? You know, the person in charge is going to change every 4 years. He's going to be chosen by the least qualified people to choose him. And all the people under him are going to know nothing at all about the job that they're doing before they were actually put into that role. And that's essentially democracy. You know, the Minister of Education, have they spent a lifetime teaching? You know, has the Minister for the Economy, has he spent a lifetime working in the economy? No, he hasn't. They swap them around, don't they? They'll spend a year being the minister for this and a year being the minister for that. None of them are the best at what they're doing.
Nothing ever settles.
No, that's it. You haven't got the time to actually put plans into motion. I mean, say that this government, well, obviously they're having the election now, but a government puts its plans into motion 4 years' time. There's another government in there and it thwarts those plans, changes them, turns them around. You know, it really couldn't be
always
worse.
Has. Yep.
How does it get that way? It gets that way through temptation, doesn't it? Somebody says, well, you don't need a king. You don't need one person in charge. You need democracy. You can all be in charge. You can all be the king. You can make the rules. And I'm sure there were some sensible people saying, well, I don't want to be making the rules. I want the lawmakers to be making the rules, not the farm labourers.
Middle-aged housewives.
middle-aged housewives, yeah. as it is now. Yeah. So work is a blessing, really. You know, it's a blessing that we are able to use our hands and our minds to create things, and we can take pride in what we have created, and we can give those things to the people that need them, or we can make things for your own family. You think a man years ago, you know, he would have known how to build a house, and a woman would have known how to make all the clothes. The man probably made the shoes. And the clogs,
yep.
And they would have taken great pride in it. You know, you wouldn't have just had an identikit bowl. It would have been an intricately carved bowl and an intricately carved spoon, you know, that took a long time to make, instead of just buying something off the shelf. And you could take pride that I made this. And everything would have looked slightly different. So work is not a curse. You know, it's a great blessing. And also when you've done a hard day's work and you come home and you get into a hot bath, you know, and your wife's cooked the dinner for you, I mean, that's a great feeling.
Money in the bank, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you've done a good day's work, you've earned a decent wage, you've done a good job for your boss or whatever. I mean, I think it says in the Bible that's one of the pleasures, isn't it? Is doing a good day's work and having a good meal afterwards, and it's, you know, it's very true.
That's right. Life is good. Yeah.
Getting back to this, the idea that the dirtier one's hands get, the more degrading the work, is a Jewish, not a German idea. As in every other area, the German first asks how, and then what. It is less a question of the position I fill and more a question of how well I do the duty that God has given me. So saying it's more important is how well you do something than what it is that you are actually doing. And that is so true. You know, when you meet people, if you meet somebody that is happy at their job and loves doing their job, it's an absolute pleasure to meet them. You know, and they'll be really interested in what they're doing, and you think, well, yeah, they're doing a great job, and it doesn't matter what it is. It could just be somebody, you know, working as a waitress, or it could be somebody that's a lecturer, it could be somebody that's somebody that's a mechanic that loves what they do. Explains it all to you.
When was the last time you heard someone whistling?
Yeah, everybody used to whistle. Everybody used to sing at work, didn't they? He used to sing at work. I think it's in Henry Ford's The International Jew, and it talks about when those pianos first came out with the rolls on them and the music on them, and that was the first time that there'd been this automated music. And the idea that could be sold, you know, that infuriated people, because everybody just used to sing. Nobody thought, you know, this is my property, this song. This is my copyright. I should be making money out of this. And then the whole music industry and the records and the cylinders and all of that, this idea that somebody could own a song came about. Before then, all the songs were just owned by everyone and everybody would sing. And that was, you know, that was how you got into music. Again, it's how well you do the job that matters more than the job itself. And also then, you know, if you're good at doing a job, you're going to be happy doing that job. And if you're happy doing that job, you're going to be good at doing it. You know, they both work together, yeah. Don't they?
Same with if a job is challenging. I mean, sometimes I've got problems when I'm making a video, but I can honestly say I've overcome every problem that I've ever had. I've overcome when I've made these videos, but it's been quite challenging at times. But that's part of it.
Well, the greater the challenge, you know, the more proud of it you become. You know, I mean, even with doing this radio stuff, I'm continually trying to improve it.
Oh, I know that for a fact. You put the hours in.
And you know, and the research for research for podcasts as well. We did one the other day on Baden Powell, which I'm, you know, I'm really proud of that. And a lot of research went into that, digging up lots of different bits and pieces and putting them together into a script. Yeah, and you're constantly trying to improve and do better than you have done before. And it's a pleasure to do when you do it like that. You know, you don't want to just rush
things. If everybody thought like that, yeah. If everybody in the country thought like that, we'd be out of the hole in no time.
Well, it's just getting people to understand that's where the contentment comes. This is what the National Socialists were saying. You know, work will bring you contentment. And that's what they're trying to teach people like Jews and gypsies and people that had gone wrong in society by sending them off to those camps where they would teach them, you know, the pleasure that work can actually be. They were trying to reframe people and say, look, you know, work is not a curse. You should be able to find something that you're good at doing, that you enjoy doing. And not only will you earn enough money to have a good lifestyle yourself, but you'll be contributing to the upkeep of the nation and the well-being of the nation. And that's what they were trying to teach these people. And they weren't the first to do that with the Jews. The British did that with the Jews. I think back in the 15th, 16th century, when they came back over from Cromwell at one point, they tried to put the Jews on farms and teach them how to farm. And they just weren't able to. I think there's quite a few countries that have tried to reframe the Jews to get them to understand the value of work. But it's never worked.
The problem is, the problem is, if you denounce nationalism, which it seems like every country in the world seems to do these days, then you can hardly say, you know, let's do this for the nation, because when you're denouncing nationalism, you know, people are not looking to better the nation. It means nothing. And that's a problem.
They don't even want patriots in the army anymore, Dennis. Do you know that?
No.
Yeah, they got a list of things in the army to watch out for because it means you're a far right extremist. And one of them is being a patriot.
It is in their eyes. I can see where they're coming from, because a patriot is a nationalist, and a nationalist, he's not right wing. I've said this many times, more centre ground than anybody, but they don't look at it like that because they fear the problems they've had in the past with nationalists. They don't want it again. That's a problem.
If people love their country, you know, and they go to fight in the army, they lay down their life for their country. If you've got people that are in the army just for the money, then, you know, they're going to desert if the guy gets tough, aren't they?
They're
going to say, well, it's not worth laying my life down for this. You know, it's not worth laying your life.
I saw a new poster on your website, you know, Radio Albion, and they were saying they don't know why they were invading, or they don't know why they died. I can't remember the exact wording, but it was really true to the point that these, you know, people were going to fight in Germany. They had no idea why.
They were told it
you
was.
Can't.
Yeah, I'm trying to
think which poster it is.
Trying to remember the one. I mean, they told them that they were fighting for freedom and democracy. But what's that to fight for? Well, that's what they say today.
Yeah, a nation they don't recognise. That's the one.
Yeah, the nation they didn't recognise.
The nation do. Yeah.
But they told them Germany was going to invade. That's what they told them. Germany was going to invade Britain, and we were all going to be speaking German. That's what they told them. But today they will say, oh, it was fighting for freedom and democracy. But no, nobody would have fought a war for ideas like freedom and democracy, you know, an idea. You fight a war because you're frightened that your wife and children are going to be slaughtered if you don't. You know, that's the reason. And say you've got Muslims in the army and they're told they have to fight against other Muslims, you know, they're not going to do that, are they? Not going to do that for a paycheck.
I would have thought that we were against the religion.
Yeah.
Can't be sure, but.
Yeah, it is, but diversity is supposedly a strength, isn't it?
Mm.
Getting back to this, we call ourselves a workers' party because we want to rescue the word work from its current definition and give it back its original meaning. Anyone who creates value is a creator, that is, a worker. We refuse to distinguish kinds of work. Our only standard is whether the work serves the whole, or at least does not harm it, or if it is harmful. Work is service. If it works against the general welfare, then it is treason against the fatherland. You know, what I do with Radio Erin, I look at that as work. You know, this is the work that I do. And it, I look at it as a service. And, you know, it's voluntary work, but it's still work. But to somebody that's been brought up to think, well, you know, work is a bad thing and you should try to avoid doing work, you know, that's going to confuse them. That is going to confuse them, but work should be seen as a good thing. And as they're saying here, anyone who creates value is a creator. You know, these podcasts that we create, they have a lot of value to the people that listen to them. They have a lot of value to us that create them as well. But it's not monetary value, but it's still value.
Well, one of the problems is when people are saying they don't want to work, one of the problems is because they can get more on the dole not doing any work. So that's another problem.
Well, that's a great shame. You know, maybe that's done on purpose, isn't it? You know, they don't.
I'm pretty sure, yeah. So, because it does stop people from wanting to work. Because why are they going to work when they get the same for nothing?
Well, you know, they don't want people to have a sense of fulfillment. You know, they want people to be just buying materialist nonsense, don't they, and doing what they're told.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe they're quite happy to have people on the dole. Otherwise, they'd be finding work for them, wouldn't they? They'd be saying, look, we've got all this infrastructure we want that needs building. We'll guarantee everyone
and
a job.
You can't say, you know, we don't need more roads, can you?
Yeah.
It'll take you 4 hours to get to work, get home at night. Yeah.
Potholes in all of them. And that was the thing, yes, that the NSDAP did. They got everybody back to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's Corbyn saying? Oh, we're going to do away with the universal credit. We're going to increase these benefits. Nothing about actually a huge, great work program to get people back to work and ensure they're going to get paid a good wage for doing it. And if you...
Well, I look at it this way. With Corbyn being a member of the Fabian Society, he's a communist. And my father escaped Europe, communist. So, you know, there's no way I'll be voting for that guy.
There was a Romanian professor the other day who left his university in America because he said it was communist. It was exactly what he left the Romania when it was under, yes, Soviet hands. It was exactly what he had left Romania to get away from. And his university is now the same. It was something to do with transgenderism, I think. Maybe he said something like only women can give birth, something like that. Something ridiculous. Speech laws that they've come up with. But this value thing, you know, what we create has value. What is it that the money makers or the money lenders, the banksters, what is it that they create? They just create debt. They don't create anything that has any real
misery.
Value. You know, nothing of any real value in the real world. And all their income comes from the interest that's put on this debt that they create. They're not creators. That's they're, right. You know, they're destroyers. Well, once you take that out of the system, then everything starts to be looked at in a different way. That's why, you know, Christianity and the Bible and the early church, that's why, you know, they were so hard on usury, and it was so important that usury was not allowed, and it was one of the seven deadly sins, and it was seen as, you know, almost as bad as murder to get involved in usury, because they, you know, it permeates through the whole of society, and you end up with a situation today where, you know, some work, which is essentially good, is seen as something to be avoided. Because the people at the top, you know, they're saying you want to be like us. You don't want to work. You want to just have your money making all this income and have all these other idiots around you. You want them to be working for you. Don't care about them. They're you're an individual. You're nothing to do with them.
So you can, exactly right.
You know, you can extort whatever you like from them. It's the whole system that is rotten, and we're seeing the end results of it now, aren't we?
We certainly are, yeah.
Getting back to Goebbels, Marxist nonsense claimed to free labour, yet it degraded the work of its members and saw it as a curse and a disgrace. It can hardly be our goal to abolish labour, but rather to give new meaning and content. The worker in a capitalist state, and that is his deepest misfortune, is no longer a living human being, a creator, a maker. He has become a machine, a number, a cog in the machine without sense or understanding. He is alienated from what he produces. Labour is for him only a way to survive, not a path to higher blessings, not a joy, not something in which to take pride or satisfaction or encouragement, or a way to build character. So that sums it all up, doesn't it? You know, we just looked at as...
Yeah.
Economic units in the system that we've got, economic units that can just be swapped around. You know, nothing is based on somebody's character, what they're actually made of. It doesn't matter if somebody's black or Chinese or whatever. You just got to have a certain number of economic units, and they're going to make a certain amount of money for you.
That's right.
Which is, you know, that's communism, but it's the same as capitalism, where it looks at everybody.
Yeah, that's where you get the two sides of the same coin.
It is just exactly the same when you look at it like that. We are a workers' party because we see in the coming battle between finance and labour the beginning and the end of the structure of the 20th century. We are on the side of labour and against finance. Money is the measuring rod of liberalism. Work and accomplishment, that of the socialist state. The liberal asks, what are you? The socialist asks, who are you? Worlds lie between. So again, that's the nationalist way, isn't it? Who are you? It's the ethnicity.
Sure.
That is all important. Yep. And the Marxist would say, are you a part of the working class? That's what's important, not what your ethnicity is. So that's the difference. But and again, when you look at Marxism and communism, what did it do for the workers? Well, it slaughtered them all, killed all the farmers.
Just a bit, yeah.
You said they were all bourgeois because they were employing farm labourers, and yet they were the ones providing all the food that was needed. You know, they did the same in Cambodia and in Vietnam. And what it says here, money is the measuring rod of liberalism. So with liberalism, it's all just based on how much money something can produce, whereas the National Socialist State, it's the work that's done and the accomplishments of that socialist state. I mean, it wouldn't matter how much money you've got in the world if your country was just full of Negroes with an IQ of under 90, you know, what would that state be able to accomplish? Nothing. But if you had a state that was full of, you know, white people with a nationalist sentiment, you know, they're going to do amazing things. Look at what happened in Australia. When you got white people and their class was a prisoner class. They were the people that didn't actually have a job in England and that had been, you know, sent to prison.
Well, the convicts, yeah.
Convicts, yeah. Yeah. But because they were white, that's what mattered. Who they were is what mattered, not what they did. And, you know, within 100 years, they've built a first world civilization that everybody else in the rest of the world was dying to get there and wanted to live there. And it was built by
them. Which is going to get brought down within 10 years.
yeah. By changing that. You know, by changing that that goal, isn't it? By changing that mentality, by, you know, instead of saying, well, what matters is who you are, they're saying what matters is what you are. Just so long as you're a human, you can come to Australia. Well, Australia isn't that bad, but it is filled with Chinese and it's getting worse. But they do stop the refugees from coming in, don't they? They stick them all on an island.
I'm not so sure. I haven't been clued up on Australia for a while. I know they brought like laws forcing families to have these vaccines, so I don't think it's a great government. But anyway,
yeah, I'm thinking about the that island they've got, anybody that tries to break into Australia by boat, they just stick them all on an island. They say, you're not coming in.
All right.
You can go and stay on this island and we'll take you back to your own country when you want. Or you can stay on the island for as long as you like because there's no war on this island. You know, you've got your asylum there.
Yeah.
And that, that seemed to get rid of all the boat people. And people stopped trying to break into Australia. So, you know, why don't they do that everywhere else?
Yeah.
You know, that's the solution.
Or the island.
Put that there. Yeah. Ideal places. We've got plenty of islands off of Britain we could put there.
Nice and cold and wet.
Surviving on seabirds, you know. They've got plenty of food they could find, you know. Kill seagulls, I guess, and eat them. There were people that did that, weren't there, up in Scotland, living on an island.
Oh, well, yeah.
Right up until the 50s. And they were just killing seabirds and eating them. And that was it. That was their diet. I forget what their name was.
I think they'd soon be making their way back, wouldn't they?
Well, look what it says here, you know, we can see the beginning and the end of the structure of the 20th century. It will be a battle between finance and labour. You know, very prescient that. I mean, that is what happened, wasn't it? It's just that communism won.
Yeah, with the help of the military.
He says, we do not want to make everyone the same, nor do we want levels in the population, high and low, above and below. The aristocracy of the coming state will be determined not by possessions or money, but only on the quality of one's accomplishments. One earns merit through service. Men are distinguished by the results of their labour. That is the sure sign of the character and value of a person. I mean, all of that's really, really important, isn't it? You know, you don't want... Let's start at the beginning here. He says, we don't want to make everyone the same. And what's the principal goal of our modern society? Equality. Everybody's got to be the same.
To lower everybody.
Yeah, lower everyone down to the same level so that everyone's the same. Women must be being oppressed. Negroes must be being oppressed because there's more of them in prison. It can't possibly be that they're more likely to actually commit crime. Can't possibly be that women don't actually do as much work as men because they spend a lot of time pregnant and bringing up children. We have to make everybody the same. What they're saying is, no, we don't want to do that. Next they say, but neither do we want different levels in the population, high and low, above and below. So they don't want these big gaps between the richest people and the poorest people. They want people that are looked up to be there not because of the possessions or money, but because of the quality of their accomplishments. Quality of their accomplishments and by the results of their labour. So somebody that had actually built loads of things and had provided work for loads of people, that would be an accomplishment. You know, they could quite rightfully say, well, look what I've done. I'm very good at business. I've created all this for the country. So I deserve to have some respect. And then you can compare that to, say, somebody who's been involved in banking and they've got the same amount of money, but they haven't actually built anything off their own back. All they've done is collect on money. And you'd say, well, that's a sign of a bad character. You know, you haven't invested this.
No, feed on misery.
Yeah. Again, there's a bit in the New Testament, isn't there? One of the parables Jesus tells, and he gives some money out to people, and some of them go away and they invest it and they try to make more out of it and they do lots with it, and somebody else just buries it and doesn't actually do anything with it. You know, it's a similar sort of story there, isn't it? You know, if you make the most of what you've got, because everyone's really just got the same, you know, we're all human beings, we're all white men, we all start out the same. You make the most of what you've got with that, then, you know, you're going to get respect. And as we talked about the other week with the government system that they were hoping to put in place, you would have the best people from every guild. So every sort of area in the economy, like, I don't know, wool work, leather work, food work, what have you, the very best people from those guilds would then be put together as running the country. So that, like that way,
which is the exact right thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and that way you've got people that, you know, that they've got merit which they've earned through service. And that shows you the value that they've got, and that they are the sort of people that should be put in positions of power. They have a right to be listened to because they've shown, you know, they've shown that they should have a right to be listened to because they've, you know, served their country in such a great way by creating all these things and creating all this wealth. So a totally different way of looking at it. But the, you know, the big thing is, before we had usury, wealth was a good measure of this. Because you wouldn't have any wealth unless you'd actually been very, very industrious and created this wealth. But since it can now be created through usury, no longer can you look at the amount of money that somebody's got as being a judge of their character. Whereas originally you could. If you don't have usury there, then it's a very, you know, it's a very easy way to see that somebody, you know, somebody has merit. And that's why these people were, you know, the people that had a lot of money were running our society years ago, 1,000 years ago, what have you. And you'd have the king and you'd have the elders and you'd have an aristocracy. And these people that were running things, they had a right to be there because they'd shown that they were extremely intelligent, extremely adept at doing things, obviously healthy, wise, and they'd become wealthy through doing so. Because they'd become wealthy, you know, that wealth could be seen as a measure of the man, and obviously the man was somebody that should be listened to and that, you know, you would want to listen to because what they would say would be of benefit to you. And it could all be measured by the wealth that someone has, but no longer. No longer.
I'll tell you what I'm not keen on. You know, the amount of gambling. I mean, if I were to, you know, a gambler with a problem, I mean, there's no way you can turn it. Everywhere, you know, TV stations at night, they're all gambling. You're on your phone, you're gambling. You went to the service stations, you've got fruit machines. I really think, you know, that, and that again is a creator of misery.
Yeah, and what does that rely on? That relies on this idea, the same as I was saying with the lottery, isn't it? You know, work is a curse. You don't want to be working. Just, you know, with a little bit of effort and this gambling, you could win all this money, and then you'd never have to work again.
And it's, yeah, just dream. You know,
if people didn't have this idea that working was bad and not something you want to be doing, then, you know, they probably really wouldn't be that interested in gambling. What would be the point? You know, easy come, easy go, isn't it? You know, if you get all the money easy, you're going to waste it.
Yeah, I mean, most people do put the winning streak back in again. That's the problem. It's addictive, isn't it? It's a drug.
If you have to work really hard to get something, and you don't get it through credit, you get it through saving a little bit every week, you know, you're really going to take care of what that is that you spent that money on. You're really going to take care of it. You know, if you've just got it straight away through gambling, or even if you've just taken out a loan. I mean, I know I've taken out loans for things in the past, and, you know, a year after you've had the thing or whatever, you're still paying back this money for it, and you don't even have the item anymore, and yet you're still paying back for it because it easy come as easy go.
For it, yeah. Correct.
And you get yourself into trouble. You know, that is another thing that, you know, people always used to say. You know, never a borrower or a spender bee or something like that. They would say, you know, you should always save up if you want something. You know, never get credit. And then they come out with credit cards and loans and all of this. But well, nobody used
people
to do that.
Never did. They thought going into debt was, you know, it wasn't the thing to do. You know, most people avoided debt all they could. But then, as you just mentioned, then when the credit card came out, and as Michael E. Jones said, when the credit card's coming out, you know, that means you're not getting paid enough wages. You know, you're being robbed in a certain area, and they offered these credit cards, often, you know, sent through, you know, the mail. It's usury.
Yeah, it was something you didn't admit to, was, you know, having exactly, to get into debt, having to borrow.
Shame.
Yeah, it's shameful. And you know, and with that as well, with the advent of the credit card, there's all, of course, there's also been all this inflation and the increases in the price of the houses and all of that. And now nobody can afford to buy houses when they're young. Well, you know, it's only 50 years ago, people would save up, you know, and they'd be able to buy themselves a plot of land, maybe a little bit longer than that, but things were affordable back then before we had all this credit. He says, the value of labour under socialism will be determined by its value to the state, to the whole community. And I'll just stop there. So it's saying if something is useful to the people, then, you know, it should be worth money. And what I think what that means is people that are looking after the elderly, that's really important. They should be paid good money. That's a value to the state, to the nation. We don't pay good money to people that care for the elderly. We pay them terrible money, and you end up with, a lot of time, you end up with, you know, not very good people doing
abuse.
It. You end up, abuse and non-whites. And yet that should be of such high value. It's the same with looking after the kids as well. You know, really the kids should be looked after by the mother. But, you know, that's our most valuable possession there, our children and our elderly. So whoever looks after them should, you know, they should be paid good money for that. It's, you know, it's a value to the state. So I think that's what he means by that.
I think it's a sure sign when the elderly are not looked after and the children are open to abuse, it's a sure sign that the government isn't for its people. It doesn't get any clearer than that.
Definitely. Definitely. He says, labour means creating value, not haggling over things. And again, that's a dig at the merchants and the Jews and the middleman who makes his money from buying one thing from one person and then selling it on to the other. He hasn't actually created anything. He's made his money by putting up the price on something that the other person needed. Now, this was another thing they never used to do. When there was a shortage of things, like important things, like say there'd been, I don't know, an earthquake and there was lots of building materials that were needed. Nowadays, they would put the price up on the building materials. You know, the individual vendor would say, oh, there's a need for these, so I'm going to put the price up. Back then, the government or the local government would subsidize the building merchant so that everybody could afford to get them, so that people could buy things cheaper. If something was needed, then the value needs, you know, the price of it needs to come down. Whereas the way we look at it today, we'll put the price up. And that's the middleman's way of looking at it, merchant's way of looking at it, which is of no value, as Goebbels says here. The soldier is a worker when he bears the sword to protect the national economy. The statesman also is a worker when he gives the nation a form and a will that help it to produce what it needs for life and freedom. So the statesman that we have today, I mean, obviously, I don't think they have. Clearly, they don't have much value. But if you had a good statesman that was sorting things out that are going to fix the country, like Adolf Hitler did, would build it. He was setting up all the infrastructure and getting everybody back to work. You know, of course, that's work that he's doing as a statesman. And that's really what. You know, that's really what needs doing everywhere, isn't it? You know, just build up the infrastructure, provide the work for the unemployed, give them a good wage. Once they've got a good wage, there's more money floating around, which means that, you know, more products need to be made for these people to spend their money on. Because there's more products that need to be made, there's more jobs that are available. And if you don't allow immigration... Yeah, if you don't allow immigration, everything just gets better and better and better. If you allow immigration in there and you allow these people to get to the top, these ruthless people that don't care about who what type of person it is that's there, and they just want to make the money, you end up with, you know, this situation that it is now, where life gets worse and worse instead of getting better.
Yep.
It's, you know, it's full spectrum, isn't it? It's whichever way you look at it, you know, the whole system that we have now is, you know, it seems almost like deliberately set up to harm us, whichever way you look at it.
Yeah.
And it's all, you know, whether it's deliberate or not, it's all the in results of going against natural law, going against traditions, going against Christianity. I'm sure there were people at the time saying, look, if you do this, things are going to go wrong. And people would have said, well, how's it going to go wrong? You know, it's only a little bit of usury, and that's going to make, you know, that's going to make more money for the church if we allow that. And you end up with it like this. It's like gay marriage. What's wrong with that? Two men love each other. What's wrong with that? Kids are now being adopted by them.
I'll give you a classic of what you're just saying that I heard only today. It was the fact that obviously they've changed the law now on, you know, when you go to court, that legal aid is no longer available. So unless you've got a whole lot of money, you know, you stand very little chance of actually winning a court case. The sisters, they bring in work for the courts anyway, and, you know, you just literally plea bargaining. But what amazed me was the Muslims who had raped in the early 80s are now who are now free, didn't really get the sentences deserved anyway. They're actually getting legal aid to fight being sent back to Pakistan. I mean, so the poor girls that get raped can't afford legal aid. Or allowed legal aid, and yet the millions are spent on the Muslims to stop them from being deported. I mean, does it get any crazier?
Yeah, it's like that Shamima Begum getting legal aid to while she's out there in Syria fighting against losing her citizenship to Britain because her family's still here. And that's all down to this human rights nonsense instead of going with, you know, your Christian rights that we had given to us by God. Right. You know, you got rights given to us by the state. They can take them away, and they have. They've taken away the right to legal aid there for most people.
Yeah, it's amazing.
A furrowed brow is as much a sign of labour as a powerful fist. A white collar worker should not be ashamed to claim with pride that of which the manual labourer boasts. Labour. The relations between these two groups determine their mutual fate. Neither can survive without the other, for both are members of an organism that they must together maintain if they are to defend and expand their right to exist. So it's like the nation is a body. You got some bits which are the hands, some bits which are the feet, so, you know, a bit which is the head, and they all need to be working together so that that body can do all the things that a body can do. If they're working against one another, if the feet are striking against the hands and the hands are trying to topple the head because the hands think they're going to do a better job of it, you know, you're not going to be able to get anywhere. I mean, that's my analogy there. He says, we call ourselves a workers' party because we want to free labour from the chains of capitalism and Marxism. In battling for Germany's future, we freely admit to it and accept the odium from the liberal bourgeoisie that results. We know that we will succeed in bringing new blessings out of their curses. God gave the nations territory to grow grain. The seed becomes grain, and the grain becomes bread. The middleman of it all is labor. So it's us in the middle of it. We're the ones that can create all these raw materials. We can turn them into these inventions and these products that we make. You know, forget the Negro never invented anything, did he? Nothing. We come up with a wheel, everything. He who despises labor. He who despises labor. Well, no, they just had a tree trunk that they would float around on. I don't think they ever invented a seaworthy boat. Everything that we have, you know, it's all been created by the white man. Every part of civilization, first invented by us, and it's all shaping the raw materials that we've got in the earth. If we were all middlemen, you know, we'd be just as bad as the Negro. We'd never invent anything if we were all middlemen, just, you know, trying to get hold of something from one person and sell it to another.
Yeah.
He who despises labour but accepts its benefits is a hypocrite. That is the deepest movement meaning of our movement. It gives things back their original significance, unconcerned that today they may be in danger of sinking into the swamp of a collapsing world view. He who creates value, works, and is a worker. A movement that wants to free labour is a workers' party. Therefore, we National Socialists call ourselves a Workers' Party. When our victorious flags fly before us, we sing, "We are the army of the swastika. Raise high the red flags. We want to clear the way to freedom for German labor." And they did. They did. Mm-hmm. They did just that. And yet today they get reviled. And yet they really were doing what was best for the working man. The communists didn't. As we said, they just slaughtered the working man. Anyway, we've reached the end of the podcast, Dennis. Thank you very much for coming on. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truth Without Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
RadioAlbion.com.